My job doesn't entail writing books. But yet I know that my local church publisher is going to publish that book and is going to sell that book, and I'm going to get royalties. So I come to the office in the morning at 9 o'clock, and I sit at my desk, and I start writing my book. Not only do I start writing my book, I ask my secretary to type the book for me. Now you're laughing, Kevin. Is that a conflict of interest or not? It's a conflict of interest. Why is it a conflict of interest? Because I'm using corporate assets. My time is a corporate asset. The time of my assistant is a corporate asset. And if I use those facilities, my time, that is a conflict of interest. Can sit on two corporate boards, so long as one is faithful in the performance of their duties. This is one that always causes people a lot of issues and questions. The General Conference has tried to address this by making adjustments to policy, which say, because of the common objectives of membership currently held on more than one denominational committee, it doesn't of itself constitute a conflict of interest, provided that all other aspects of the policy are met. Well, working policy says that. But let me talk about the legal requirements for a minute, because the church is not above the law. If the law says something, we must obey what the law says. When we sit on a board, can I pick on my two friends from Adventist Healthcare for a minute? The chair of the Adventist Healthcare board is here. When he sits on the board of Adventist Healthcare, he is there as the chair of that board. Decisions that are made, his vote on that board is and should be in the best interests of that corporate entity. When he moves over to his position as president of the union, his decisions on that body must be in the best interests of that corporate entity, of the union. So even though church policy allows for individuals to serve on multiple boards, I can't be sitting, or my friend Dave cannot be sitting as a board member of the hospital board and make a decision that is contrary to the best interests of the hospital, but is in the best interests of the union. Because in his current position, serving on that board, he must act in the best interests of the board on which he is sitting. That's the requirement of the law. That's the fiduciary duty that we have as board members. Okay? Now, I know you're starting to get a little drowsy. But you know, we live in changing times, and while we've talked about what may or may not be conflict of interest, as times change, new understandings occur of what conflict of interest is, and so we have to adapt and adopt what happens. Was that too quick for you? In the old days, we would type, and you'd hit the carriage return. Today, we use computers. And as this young lady quite eloquently showed us, times change, and we have to change with the times. Otherwise, we end up in difficulties. Conflict of interest falls into three categories. Those that require disclosure, those that require prior approval, and those that are prohibited. So let's look at some situations where this might occur. Serving on two corporate bodies, requiring disclosure. As long as it's known and approved, we're okay. Involvement with a company that does business with our organization. Nothing wrong with that as long as everyone is aware. If I have a private business and I want, let me give you an example. Let's say I own shares in Dell. Everybody has Dell computers or Apple computers. If I own shares in Dell and I'm sitting on a board and we're getting ready to buy 500 Dell computers, do I have a conflict or don't I have a conflict? I have a conflict. So what should I do? I should disclose that I have a conflict because I am a shareholder of Dell Computers, and remove myself from that situation. That doesn't mean that there's something wrong with that. It just means that I have to come forward and disclose that I have an issue. Making referrals or directing purchasing opportunities to a business I have an interest in. I own a hardware store. My local church is in a building project. I serve on the board. I tell the board, buy the lumber from that hardware store. Is that a problem? It may be if I don't disclose that I have an interest in that hardware store and I'm going to financially benefit. As long as there's full disclosure and everyone understands and all the other factors are met, it may not be a problem. Favoritism in employment. Frequently we come across this where family members are hired. The president of a hospital hires his wife to do this, hires his children to do this and that. Favoritism in employment is also a conflict. Maybe a potential problem, but as long as there's disclosure and everyone is aware, may not be a problem. Instances that require prior approval. Possessing significant financial interest in a business that is involved with the organization. More and more often, people are involved in outside businesses to what their primary function is. Financial interest in an organization where you own the company, somebody else may be running it, where you own the company, requires disclosure so that the conflict of interest may be upfront and forward. Lending or borrowing funds from third parties. What's wrong with that, people say? Why can't I loan or why can't I allow someone to borrow from me? As long as it's disclosed up front and discussed before the action is taken, that might be okay. But if there isn't disclosure, either you're in someone's pocket or they're in your pocket, or you're at their mercy, and then they've got you. If I give you a $2,000 or $3,000 gift, you're beholden to me, aren't you? Or a $10,000 gift. What's your price? I don't know. The moment that transaction occurs, one becomes beholden to the other. Using confidential information obtained from your position, whether that's personnel matters, donor information, personal information about employees regarding their earnings, tax information, their health, how is that information used and what are you going to do with that information? Prohibited conflicts of interest. This is the area that causes individuals the most difficulty, knowing what is prohibited. The other areas we talked about, conflict of interest can be disclosed, discussed, voted on, and you move on. These areas are prohibited. And why are they prohibited? Because they come into direct conflict with the rule that has been provided. Performing duties inadequately due to involvement in external activities. If I'm running a business from my office when I should be taking care of the legal affairs of the church, is that a conflict or isn't that a conflict? Of course it's a conflict, but it's also a prohibited conflict. There's nothing that I can do, short of stopping what I'm doing, that is going to bring me within proper alignment. It is a conflict that simply cannot continue. Accepting a gift or fee for personal benefit for performing the duties of your office. Dr. Handysides told me that my honorarium for giving this half an hour talk today was going to be $50,000. I thanked him. Is that a conflict or isn't it? I didn't. If I'm performing the duties of my office, some of you are pastors. I know I've seen this problem occur over and over again. A pastor goes into a church to preach. They collect a love offering and they give him $1,000 as he's leaving the church. Is that a conflict or isn't it? It's a prohibited conflict because the duty of that pastor is to stand up and preach. He's getting a salary for that. I'm getting a salary for being here today. You're all being paid by your organizations to be here today. To expect an additional benefit for doing your job is a conflict of interest that cannot be overcome. Accepting gratuities or favors from individuals or entities that do business with your organization. Dr. Clark is going to buy a new x-ray machine. And so the supplier of the x-ray machine comes to his office and says, Leon, I'm going to send you on a cruise around the world. if you buy my machine. Is that a conflict or isn't it a conflict? Not a conflict, Leon? Depends how far they send you, right? Personal benefits in order to steer business to someone is a conflict of interest. Now, if Leon said, I'll take that trip and I will auction it or I will give it away to one of my employees, would that have solved the problem? What do you think? It would have removed the conflict from him, but it would have passed on to someone else. Personally benefiting in exchange for doing or giving a contract to someone is a prohibited conflict of interest. Associating your name or work with an external activity that implies endorsement by the organization. Bernard Madoff made me... Do you all know who Bernard Madoff is, by the way? Anybody that does not know who Bernard Madoff is? Good. Bernard Madoff made me an offer. He said, Carnick, if you invest with me, you will get 30% return on your investment year after year after year. Not a bad deal, right? On the bottom of his advertisements, Carnick Dukmetsian, investing with Bernard Madoff, the general counsel of the church, investing with Bernard Madoff. I have lent my name to someone because I've received a personal benefit. Now, you're only going to get 5% because that's all he's going to pay you. Is that a conflict for me or not? Absolutely. I have allowed my name to be used. And I'm using these examples, but they're also coming from experiences that we have seen around the church. Individuals allowing their names to be used because they're getting a benefit at the expense of someone else by using their position or their name in order for someone else to benefit. Diverting an opportunity away from the organization to oneself. We see this very frequently in the corporate field. We know that the price of stock tomorrow is going to come down on our corporation because of some public disclosure. And so what do? We call our stockbroker today and we say, sell, sell, sell. Is that a conflict or is that not? Or we say, buy, buy, buy. Is that a conflict or is that not? We're using inside information obtained by our position, from our position, to benefit ourselves. Owning or leasing property with the knowledge that the organization has an active or potential interest in it. Well, we talked about that earlier. But again, it's something that happens to occur time and time again. Making use or disseminating information acquired through employment for personal profit. Very common, again, in the corporate world where you hear something inside, whether you're in the accounting field, the audit field, or inside a corporation, that some big news is going to break, and so you're going to buy a lot of stock. Or you phone your friends and you say, buy stock in our company. Or Kevin Jackson's company is going public next week, and so we're all going to buy shares in Sanitarium Health Food. Well, how did we find that out? We found that out because we were sitting around the boardroom table of Sanitarium Health Food discussing that. Can I pass that on to all my friends? No. Improper, unacceptable behavior. As I said earlier, conflict of interest is not an accusation. And it doesn't imply that one's judgment has been compromised. All it means is that there is an issue and it has to be handled. And it has to be handled in a particular way. It may be a potential breach of an obligation to the organization, a potential breach of our obligation to the job that we have been hired to do. Or it may be that it advances our interest in a way that's harmful to the integrity or the mission of the organization, something that we have to be aware of. So where do we get our guidance from? Statutory provisions. Laws are passed on an ongoing basis. In the United States, as a problem occurs, a law is instituted so that the problem doesn't occur again. Laws change. Governments instill in us obligations and provisions on how we should operate. Our own corporate bylaws provide knowledge and information on what is and what isn't. Corporate policies, conditions imposed by third parties, whether they're funding agencies like ADRA is involved with or the government, impose conditions on what may or may not be a conflict of interest. Church working policy gives us guidance too. If you look at church working policy, whether it's your division or the general conference policy, you'll see quite detailed information on what constitutes conflict of interest, what you need to do to disclose it, how to avoid it, and how not to get into trouble. So, what should you do when a conflict arises? Well, depending on the conflict, in all instances, disclose in writing what the conflict is. If it's approved, one can continue. You should withdraw from the decision-making process. That doesn't mean you sit in the room. So when they're discussing your salary increases, those of you who are employees of the entity, you don't sit there in the room and cross your hands and say, okay, talk away about me. You remove yourself from that situation. Let the discussion take place without your presence. You shouldn't participate in the discussion, you shouldn't participate in the vote, and you shouldn't participate with your presence. Let the freedom of the individuals involved in the decision-making take place. I've seen minutes of some organizations where they're discussing the salary of the individual, and the individual is sitting right there in the room. I don't know how you can freely discuss one's performance or salary when they're in the room, but as board chairs, as members of the boards, you should understand or have an understanding of conflict of interest to be able to stand up and say, Mr. CEO, Mr. President, Mr. whatever it is, even the conference president, James, should not be involved in that discussion, should remove themselves from that discussion so that that group could freely discuss without a conflict, without fear of retribution, without any concerns of it taking place. Possible consequences. Unfavorable press coverage. You saw the stories of the individuals who were caught with their hand in the till, who, because of their conflict of interest, have ended up in jail. Their reputations are ruined. They've ended up in jail. The same thing could happen to us. Financial loss to the organization. Criminal prosecution. And the company or the organization could also commence legal action. And, of course, disciplinary action by your employer. But most important of all, the only thing we have as individuals is our reputation. That's the thing that we cannot afford to lose. If your reputation is gone, you might as well wrap it up, go and retire, and have a good life, because all we have is our reputation as administrators, as board members, as workers for the church. That's all we have is our reputation. So, some comments about why we should disclose. Well, if we know there's a conflict, it may allow for preventive measures of the actual conflict of interest. We may be able to overcome whatever that conflict happens to be. But if there's an apparent conflict, we can also protect the individuals by removing that conference president, that hospital president, from the decision-making over that issue. We can protect them from any allegation of an apparent conflict of interest. But it also, by disclosing, allows us to, in a systematic way, manage the conflict. We get to decide, we get to manage it, as opposed to someone else looking down on us. You know, our church members are not stupid people. Our church members look and see what we do. When things are out of the ordinary, when we cause problems, the last thing I would like to see is someone writing a book about how terrible the church is, how terrible the leadership of the church is, how bad the church was in its mismanagement because of their conflicts of interest. I'd rather take care of that problem before some disgruntled individual put that in writing and spread it throughout the church. But by doing that, we're able to manage the conflict before it increases. And also, finally, to increase the transparency and confidence of our constituency. Ultimately, that's all we have, is the confidence of our constituency. They put us in office, they trusted us to do the work that they expect of us, and we need to maintain their trust and to protect the organizational interest. The bottom line is that each individual is ultimately responsible and accountable for using good judgment in the course and exercise of our duties. That's the bottom line of conflict of interest. And by following this simple rule, we can avoid the difficulties and the problems that would ultimately occur. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Karnik. As a response to Karnik's presentation, we have asked a leader from East Africa, the division president, Geoffrey Mabana, to respond.
I do not belong to the club of the learned brethren, and therefore you will understand why I so much appreciate the presentation that Karnik has made here. Very clear, simple, straight. I have listened to a number of attempts to try and explain what conflict of interest is in our different various board settings, and I must say that this has been very comprehensive to me. I really appreciate it. I know that at times we have made attempts to give a very brief description, and I have wondered whether by that we have not even confused people on what conflict of interest is. But in this case, it came out very, very clear. What did I hear Karnik say? Conflict of interest situation is far much more than just signing a particular document on conflict of interest. It is that ethical behavior that one brings and practice brings into an organization to allow for an environment that will render effective and efficient functioning of the organization. I've had the categories, given the three categories, those that require disclosure, those that require prior approval, and those that are prohibited. And I appreciate the guidance that you have even provided on how to deal with conflict of interest situations. I really appreciate also the organizers for having included this particular presentation, because I know what happens to one as a leader if you're found in a conflict of interest situation that then brings a loss to an organization. It becomes a very painful experience. And even to have to deal with a fellow worker who has, again, been involved in such a situation, it's such a challenge and a painful experience to go through. And even, as you have properly said, to the people that we lead, the owners of the organization, it brings a big disappointment when a leader or a worker is found. So briefly, I see a well-done job in defining what conflict of interest is. You have told us what it is and what it is not, and you have also wished us well by advising us on how we could deal with such situations when they arise. Now, after having listened to this presentation, what I would like to hear a little more about, to be helped in, has to do with, whereas I accept and fully agree that providing statutory provisions, bylaws, and policies is very necessary and helpful, and to the extent that really conflict and managing conflict situations is an individual responsibility and accountability, but then how do we even go beyond making it a mechanical requirement as it is to internalize the very principles that would help one avoid conflict of interest situation so that it becomes a lifestyle of a worker like me? It is not just, I'm not acting because I'm required, but that's what I am. And I would like to see always myself, fellow leaders, having grown to that level where it is me. I love it to avoid where it's necessary or to really manage well conflict of interest situations. I want to thank you very much for this enlightening presentation.
We have a few moments for some questions. Karnik, we have, as claims counsel at Adventist Risk Management been involved in some very unfortunate situations, and often we felt too late in the game. So my question for you is, whose responsibility is it when the individual board members or administrators fail to understand and appreciate their own conflicts?
Well, as a conflict arises or perceived conflict arises, first and foremost, the responsibility falls on me as an individual who has that conflict to disclose that conflict. But the rest of you as my fellow board members need to keep a check on that as well. If you see there's a conflict, if you know that I own the business that is trying to get this contract from the organization or to do some work for the organization, and I failed as an individual to disclose that, you as a fellow board member have that obligation as well to say, Mr. Chairman, so-and-so has a conflict. Here's the conflict. And I should have the decency to then at that point stand up and walk out of the meeting to allow free discussion to take place. And it doesn't really matter whether it's me as an ordinary board member or you as the union or conference president or the division president. If someone raises that issue of conflict, we should immediately disclose that, stand up, and take the appropriate step of walking away from that discussion. I want to commend to you a short pamphlet I came across. It's called Managing Conflicts of Interest, a Primer for Nonprofit Boards. It's about 2 years old now, and it's available from an outfit called Board Source, S-O-U-R-C-E. It's maybe 80 or 90 pages long, but it outlines some of these issues that as nonprofits we ought to be considering. And while we are much more organized than the average small nonprofit, it could still bear important lessons for us as individuals who serve on these boards and come across conflicts on a regular basis.
I want to reiterate what you said, that a fellow board member doesn't just have the opportunity or the right, he has the obligation to raise the conflict.
Right.
Connie, thank you very much for this presentation. Would it be possible that the conflict of interest is in conflict with some cultural settings? Let me explain. For example, you are invited to a church, and after the service, an envelope is granted to you. And this is normal practice anytime you go to do an invitation for the church. Do you believe this conflict of interest?
I didn't understand the... So I've preached, and then I get a love offering.
That's correct, yeah. This is normal practice.
It is a normal practice in some places, correct. In my opinion, that's a conflict of interest. If I'm presented with an honorarium, I do one of two things. I either return it, or I donate it back to the organization. My preference is to return it. Why do I say that? Because as I'm here speaking today, this is part of my job. I'm getting a paycheck for this. When you're going to preach, nobody is deducting from your paycheck the amount that you're getting in that honorarium. You still continue to receive your check. Receiving that honorarium, whether it's, and I, you know, there's some debate whether it's $50, $100, or $200, but as it starts to get into the higher numbers, the more severe the conflict is, and the more likely you should be returning that. Well,
thank you. I'd like to follow up on your comment about the obligation of a fellow board member to reveal a conflict that another board member may be in. I believe that to be true, and yet I think that we have not exercised sufficient rigor in our structure in completing the circle of the conflict of interest declaration. I do not know of any place where a report on the conflict of interest declarations is brought to the board. I believe that that is best practice. I beg your pardon. I know of one case now. And have worked with a couple of other organizations towards that end and find that that is an area of some sensitivity as to how it is done. I think it's recognized that it ought to be done. Our policy does not address that, and I think we've left that unmentioned and put ourselves in a position of weakness because of that.
Sometimes the church is like the Titanic. It takes a lot of work to change directions. It wasn't that long ago, 8-9 years ago maybe, when the policy was changed. And those of you that have worked for the church for that long will recall that the former conflict of interest form that you used to sign said, "I have not been in a conflict of interest." Well, a lot of good that does. I don't remember what I had for lunch yesterday, let alone my conflict over the past 12 months. Now the form has been changed where I have to disclose and I have to say, "I will not be." It puts a positive effect on me that I will not be. And if I am, I'm to disclose. So the third aspect of Lowell's comment is, when those forms are filled out, they're not simply stuffed in a drawer, and when the auditor comes around, we say, "Here it is, we signed them." If somebody has, in fact, disclosed the conflict of interest, that should be made known. That's, I think, the full circle that you're talking about.
As the cure to most conflicts of interest is not some evil punishment, it's simply disclosure. Filling out the form, as is required in GC working policy, and saving it for the GCAST auditor doesn't cure the conflict. What cures the conflict, and the example that I reminded Brother Cooper about, is Adventist Risk Management, at our March board meeting, always has an HR report, and as a portion of that HR report, list
all the conflicts.
All the conflicts any employee stated. So, disclosure to the board, disclosure to my fellow managers who are making day-to-day operational decisions with me is really the cure. And we have one down here.
Yeah, thank you very much for the presentation. I find it very comprehensive. I first want to point out that the duty of directors, there is no duty that is actually absolute. Like, for instance, the duty of care can never be absolute on the part of anybody. The duty of obedience, you are talking about to legitimate instructions and orders or whatever, or regulations. But I have a problem with definitions that are given. The WHO definition seems to be the one that is most, or that is least problematic, because it allows for much more than just a public-private conflict. Sometimes it's possible to have a public-public conflict. You talked about, for instance, that it should not be conflicting with the success and well-being of the denomination. That is assuming that the denomination is a monolithic structure. Is it to the overall well-being of the denomination, or to the particular unit in which I am serving right now? I serve in an institution, and I have the university where I serve is trying to run this program. There's another university down the road that's trying to run another program, or the same program, and I'm serving on the board of this or that. Which one are we talking about when you talk about the denominational well-being and success? I think a lot of times, just like many pastors may want to consider that the envelope that is given as a love offering, which I actually think is a love bribery, it's not proper. But it is done. I think we wink at so many areas that are convenient, and at the others, where we know we're strong, it looks to me like then everybody gets on the horse and rides. Is a geographic or national origin a conflict of interest, for instance? when there are several countries within a particular union or division, and there are issues that will always come up, and somebody has to come from somewhere. I believe that the disclosure is very okay, but the following up on that, just like Elder Cooper said, we need to do a lot more of following up to make sure that we're really, not from a negative point of view, but from a win-win situation, bring everything on board, just like it's not allowed for somebody to bring his wife or brother or somebody, you know, that would be nepotistic, but even also on the other end, without disclosing, that is, because we know that couples do work together in the same organization a lot of times. I think it's the conflict of interest is not, it's an ongoing, evolving situation that we all need to be monitoring. And I think it's the ethical and the motives that we'll need to watch. Each person needs to watch himself.
But also understand that a conflict is not between the whole world and the organization. The conflict is between yourself and the organization. You cannot use your position to benefit yourself is the bottom line of a conflict. It doesn't matter that, you know, in your situation, you're talking about two universities. When you're serving on the board of that particular university, wherever it happens to be, whether it's a university, a healthcare institution, food production, hospital, whatever it happens to be, on that board that you're serving at that time is where you have to take the position that is in the best interests of that board, of that organization. Not somewhere down the line, not somebody else, but at that particular time.
Okay, I've seen five more hands. We're going to take those, and then we're going to invite you all to come back on Thursday and Friday for further discussion, okay?
All right.
So five more.
Yeah. I don't know whether it can also be equated to sin if you don't come in the open about this. That's one issue. Churches, it's common in Africa. We are using people who are working in organizations that are printing material for the church. We just assume that they are probably disclosing wherever they are doing that, and we are giving these possibilities every Sabbath, and it's used in the ministry for that purpose. This poses danger. Now, if we go back and then start expressing this concern, I don't know how it will be, and these are the resources that are coming to advance the work in the church. One question. Second issue, I wanted to check on whether it is clear or it is right or not. If you get together as members of the church, you have your pastor somewhere. Okay? This group take care of the pastor because of the wage factor in those specific areas. It's for the good of the cause. You look at your pastor, can't even afford to send the kids to school. Where is the boundary between conflict of interest and good cause? In this case, free conscience is a community program. People are getting together, putting resources in order to help. Yes, he's getting a salary, but you look at his wage factor. He can't afford to send kids to school. He can't do what? He can't do what? That's a good cause. Do you have to declare to anybody? Is it justified because it's coming from a group? When one does it, then it becomes conflict of interest.
What? But are you solving the problem or creating a problem when you do that? let me pick on the president of the North American division for a minute because he's not here. As you know, he sits on numerous committees and boards, and I have been present in meetings with him where he comes and he sits down and he says, okay, what board am I on and what interest am I representing here today? He comes in and he makes his decisions based on where he's at that moment. Your situation of the community supporting the pastor. Maybe that's a deeper problem that needs to be looked at somewhere else. Because by creating that precedent, all you're doing is perpetuating the problem instead of coming up with a solution.
Yes, thank you very much for your presentation. I found it very interesting. But as we have already seen, there are different realities in the world. And according to those realities, the consciousness of conflict of interest that is developed in America and the United States and somehow goes to the whole world because of this influence of the church headquarters that we have in America, will cause in certain circumstances, in cultural specificities, different approaches, of course. I would like to, first of all, make a suggestion. I think in all our theology courses, there should be a discipline on this issue all over the world. Not just in America, maybe there is, but I can speak about Colonches, where for all the course in theology, never these kind of issues are raised. And so the pastors get out from there with any idea of what's going on this level of consciousness.
I would go one step further. Not only conflict of interest, but pastors run church boards.
Absolutely.
Somebody ought to train them how to run a church board. The church
Absolutely.
Is a small micro business that they're operating.
Absolutely.
There are many aspects involved, and conflict of interest is one of those. And I think Niels Erik and Andrews, they do have a small portion, but that should be a course that pastors are required to take before you move on from a pastor to an administrative position. There's so much you need to learn.
Absolutely.
Because all of a sudden you're sitting here as the chairman of the board of a hospital. Your conference or your union is doing maybe $1 million worth of in their operation, and the hospital is doing how many billions of dollars, Lowell? $2 billion, $1 billion at Loma Linda? And here you are as an administrator thinking of pennies, and they're thinking of millions and billions. The mind just doesn't comprehend. And so it's a large learning curve.
Okay. So this is what's the commentary that, of course, you might or not consider it in the end with the recommendations that you are going to make. But my question is, it's not exactly a question. Imagine this situation. I found that the church is lacking some specificities as the world moves on and as the change goes on. And as I apprehend that, I will create an idea that is something that belongs to the church involvement, but since the church is not yet sensitive to it, I will do it and I create a project that is an independent project of the church, and it will start to receive money independently from the church, because my idea is a new idea and the church is not yet awake for that idea.
Did you do it while you were working for the church on the church hours, or did you do it when you were sleeping?
You know, that's not exactly the question.
Okay.
It's not whether when you are doing it or not. It's just that you are entitled for something that belongs to the church. And that is not only why you exist, but also when you take the spirit of prophecy heritage, you take so much out of this church that you can by your own self develop and present it in a new way, and in a way that the church is not yet awake for the importance of what you are coming with. And so suddenly the church finds out that that's a thing, that's interesting.
Thing, yeah.
And now you have an independent movement going on because you find something that is relevant and you are receiving money from different sources, also from the church's members, because your idea proved to be a good idea. And then you have the church. So what do you do? Are you going to take your know-how and what you have developed and put it in the arms of the church and let the church take care about it because that belongs to the mission of the church? Or will you insist that since you have the idea before the church added it, you are entitled to continue serving the church with your resources but at the same time receiving resources to provide for that idea? So at the same time you are giving your idea to the church, but at the same time you are receiving resources for your idea because you keep up with your own struggle, I would say.
So
in the end, what we have here, and this is to finish, for me there is a boundary that we should all consider when these things are at stake. And the boundary is what Jesus said, that you must be unite and be one. I think this is the origin of the conflict of interests. When we start to have different understandings of what it means to be united.
I would agree with the statement on United. I think there has always been a conflict of an issue to a theological issue between the example we have of the Council of Jerusalem and the authority and of the church versus the progress heretics have always made in the church. However, legally, if you think of yourself as a scientist instead of a pastor, if you're in the laboratory of the organization that employs you, and you're on the organizational's clock, and you invent a great new something, that intellectual property belongs to the employer, not to you simply because you thought about it first, because you were your employer at the time you thought about it. And so the same would be true of a pastor who thinks of a new evangelistic tool or a new outreach methodology. That belongs to the church. If it were a layman, maybe it's a different question, but you're not a layman. You're employed by the church. And so that intellectual property belongs to the church. If you're not a church employee, then you don't have a conflict. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Is this the last question? We need to move on to the next presentation, I think. One more.
I was listening carefully to your presentation, and I could agree very well and understand the concern. It's very important you addressed. However, when I read here the title, The Destructive Power of Conflict of Interest, I was thinking we are not going to limit ourselves only to the financial area. Because I was thinking, is there a conflict of interest on a different level? For example, the power I have as a chairman, how I'm using this power to sustain my position, with what people I'm going to work with and with what people not, because I'm in charge. How about the inner conflicts? How do I go to deal with it? I think the financial area has always been a problem, and you know, we can focus on that. That's something what we can see and address clearly. But there are much bigger things happening where conflict of interest is there, and we cannot really address it because it's inside a person who knows his motivation, who knows, okay, I want my idea pushed through and the other will not go through. I'm going to take charge of it. So I want to have the, in this regard, also a kind of awareness how this can be destructive for a community or for a church.
I guess, to me, the answer would be this comment. Whether it's financial or not, we're responsible and accountable for using good judgment in the exercise of our duty. Whether that is financial, whether that is putting certain board members who are our friends who are going to keep us propped up in our position, all of that is exercising our duty, and ultimately, that's the bottom line.
Thank you for the presentation. I have two simple questions. One, can a regular member raise the conflict issue to the board? And my second question is, if I understood the solutions that you gave, but if as a board member you raise the conflict question issue and nothing is done about it, for instance, a simple example, the individual decides to remain on the board while you discuss his or her issue, what can you do as a board member?
That's a good question, because a lot of times as the issue is brought forward, the individual does not want to remove themselves. At that point, what you would want to do is ask the board to take an action, make a motion. As a board member, you're entitled to make motions. And hopefully you'd have one person to support you and bring that motion forward and have a decision made by the board if that individual will not remove themselves. When you're talking about individuals bringing an issue forward. I didn't understand if they were board members or non-board members. Non-board members? Absolutely. My suggestion to them would be to talk to the board chair or to the vice chair or to a board member and bring the issue forward and let them take it forward from there.
Thank you. I'm aware of the time limit. Well, just a short question. Is there a way of implementing such guidelines concerning a conflict of interest in small countries, in small missions? Because I've seen abuse in small countries happening, because obviously the mission and the church-owned companies are working very closely together. So I've seen jobs and board memberships given as a reward for baptism, and I've seen the whole board that is in the pocket of the chairman or of the director. And what can I do, and where are the guidelines that I can appeal to?
Mo? The reason I punted over to Lowell is because he is probably one of the foremost experts in the church on board governance. And the issue you have raised is more than a conflict of interest, it's board governance. And I think that's an area that you're going to be discussing and discussed yesterday. And we'll have some more opportunity to discuss it over the next couple of days. But really, that's more than just a simple conflict of interest. That's really, how do we operate our church? What is the value system that we are using? What are the morals that we are using in operating the church? And it's a deeper problem than just, do I have a conflict or don't I have a conflict?
Okay, thank you, Carney. What we're going to do is ask everyone to stand up and stretch, and we're going to take 5 minutes, if you need to, real quick, as we change the technology over.
Who's on next?